Hello and welcome to Watch What Crappens, a podcast about all that crap on Bravo that we just love to talk about. This is part two of the recap. If you missed part one, go check out your podcast feed. It's right there. And without further ado, let's get right back into the recap.
Oh my God. So I was at the library and I used up all of my meeting room time. So I apologize.
Oh, it's okay. Wait, where are you now?
I'm outside the library.
Oh, I love this.
Children's library, and so like all the other tables are around children, so I apologize.
We have another very amusing audio update here. Ray had to change locations, so now Ray is actually just broadcasting here from a bench outside on the streets of New York City, right?
Yes, I'm homeless.
So if you hear birds tweeting or passing traffic, just consider it an immersive experience, just like the valley itself. Okay, so where we left off, we were talking. Well, I don't remember what we were even. We're probably ranting about someone or something. Tom Schwartz, whatever. But we're just gonna move on. Which is that now everyone has climbed onto this party bus to get to the gay club for Zach, and there's people are dancing up on the top, but down in the bottom of the bus, Brittany is talking to Jesse, and she's like, "You owe me an apology," and he's like, "For what?" She's like, "Well, for what happened last night, where I was like confused. I was like, oh my God. And you said that Jack said that, like, you said the same that I want to like set up Danny and all things, this, like that, whatever." And Jesse's like, "Oh my God. I'm just like so sick of all this Danny and Nia shit." She goes, "Well, it's not even about that. It's about the way you treated me." And Lacey's like, Yeah, Jesse. Lacey, of course, jumps in. She's like, "Yeah, you lumped her in with Jax. I mean, he's obviously an abomination. You made her feel just so bad. So just apologize." Because Brittany's whole thing is like, "How could you say that I had it out for Danny last season just because Jax announced it on our podcast?" So she basically wants an apology from Jesse about this. And she's saying how Jesse just loves to stir the pot. And, you know, he always believed whatever Jax was telling him, whatever, whatever, whatever. So Jesse announces, he says that he's had a resentment for Brittany for over a year because at Yamashiro, when Lacey showed up at the end of filming, Brittany mouthed off to her and said something about like, "Oh, Jesse should never have introduced Lacey to Isabella in the first place."
See, this is like, I found this like so interesting because I expected this season, you know, because Jax is such a like attention sucking, like he's a black hole, right? Like, so I thought that like the ghost of Jax would like loom over this season, and it like shows up, but it's like, it's not as present as I anticipated it being. And like, Jesse's trying to make it like matter. But Jesse, like Danny's ghost is like the bigger ghost, you know, like Danny's ghost is the Slimer eating Jax's ghost. But like, Jesse just needs something to do. I don't think he cares this much about that. Like, Brittany, we all know what Brittany was going through. He's just picking a fight. He just doesn't want the attention to be on Danny. He needs something to do. I think he just needs something to do, you know?
Yeah.
And like, Lacey's here. Like, okay, if Lacey's not holding the resentment when she's the one who got yelled at, what are you mad at Brittany for?
Exactly. And then Brittany clarifies, like, "No, I just meant like it wasn't fair. Like, you weren't supposed to introduce the significant others to Isabella just yet. And you made that boundary. And then you introduced Lacey to Isabella. And it just felt like a violation of that." And even Lacey's like, "Yeah, I get it." Like, shut up, apologize to Brittany, you know? So he does. He's like, "I'm sorry. You didn't deserve it. I shouldn't have jumped in the middle of the conversation." She's like, "Thank you. Thank you." So, back on the bus, on the top of the bus, I mean, it's great times, dancing, frolicking. There's literally nothing that could ever go wrong. And then, Zach is like, "Oh my God, a bird shit on me, a bird shit on me." And this is one of the great, like, celestial misdirects that we've seen, because, like, a bird shits on Zach. Yeah, and he's so focused on that that he doesn't realize there's a traffic light coming that just bonks him in the head. And honestly, it's like very funny because he's like, "Oh my God, bleeding." But like that, he could have literally been decapitated.
It looked really bad. I was surprised that he was still like conscious and speaking, you know what I mean? And like, I was like, yo, production is, I mean, they seemed worried, but everybody's a little lax. You know what I'm saying? Like, this boy's gushing from the head and he's just like, go party, whatever. How tall is Zach? How tall is it?
He's taller than you would think, actually. He's, I think, at least like 6'3". He's really tall.
Yeah. Because I was like, I was astonished. And like, Jasmine looks so small comparatively. And I'm like, it's a double decker bus. They have to factor in, like, buses will factor in the streetlights and the bridges and shit like that. So how much higher than the actual second deck does he actually stand? That was crazy.
That's crazy. And I mean, if his head had been facing a different direction, it could have gotten like eyeball. And I don't know, like, if they're going faster, like, that is death. That's not just like a thwunk. That's not just stitches. That is like dead. Like someone lost their head in the most embarrassing way on like Ho Era night for the Valley, you know, and you got decapitated.
In Mexico.
Like, that's just a bad. So now he's bleeding. And now the producer's like, oh my God, oh my fucking God. They're like, oh my God, we're going to get sued.
That's Mexico. I don't want, oh my God, if I were on a production and you die in Mexico, what are we supposed to do?
Because that would take down the show. They would cancel the show, and then they would cancel a whole bunch of other things.
Enough. It would take down what is it? Is it Pop? Which production?
Yeah. This one I think it may be Truly Original. I don't know, yeah. But like we saw what happened with you saw what happened with like what Megan Wants a Millionaire or whatever. Like the whole
VH1 reality
universe. That died. Whole, like, yeah, that whole what's his face? Why am I blanking on his name? You know, the clock.
Yeah,
Public Enemy. Flavor Flav. The Flavor Flav, yeah. the universe that came out of Flavor Flav and Brigitte, yes. Nielsen.
Like 10 different shows, and they all had to stop.
They all died. They all died. They had to rebrand the production company. So, like, that would have, that traffic light could have, like, severely impacted everything I'm brought. Alex Baskin's entire life would have been over.
A lot of Beverly Hills fans who would not have minded that.
Yeah, people would be like, should we have made the bus go faster? So now Zach is like, he's bleeding out of his head. And he's like, you guys, my request is that you still go to the bar. Like, you have to go to the gay bar. So he gets carted off to the hospital. It's funny because they like arrive and I guess he thinks he's at the hospital, but it's at the gay bar, but it's not. So they all go into the.
Was the gay bar next door to the hospital? Like, what was happening?
I think he thought that's what it was, but it looked like they just dropped everyone off there. And then he got into a production vehicle and drove off to the hospital. So they all go in, which is, by the way, this is like a nightmare. It's like you're in a gay bar and a whole bunch of like basic straight people walk in and then take over. And then like suddenly the straight guys are like dancing shittily on like the rafters. It's like when you're a gay person, you're like, oh my God, it's the basic straights, you know?
Do you know though that surprised me? Because like Nia is like, you know, I just think of them as like the church. LA, I'm sure you've talked about this on the show, but like LA has a weirdly like super churchy like subsect.
Yes.
And so like I think Nia is so exemplary of that. So I found it very weird that she was like, at one point Jasmine is like filming selfie videos next to the go-go dancer, but then Nia was too, and I was very surprised by that.
Yeah, I actually thought, like, as annoying as it is to be someone in a gay bar where he's like, oh God, here come the basic straights, there was actually, I thought, something kind of nice about the fact that all these straight people came in, and there are people who are on the more conservative side of the spectrum. They came in and they were like, it wasn't like, oh wow, we're in a gay bar. They're just like, oh, we're here. We're here in a gay bar. Like, let's keep on going. Like, the normalcy of it all was actually kind of nice to me. Even though I would not want those people in my bar.
Oh, I thought the story about, I was like, is this homophobic or not? But the story where Zach talks about how Schwartz put an Applebee's card in someone's hammock. I'm like, that's cheap.
That's also like uncomfortable for the dancer if you have like a hard piece of plastic, like up against your dick.
It's like, what? You know? And wait, but also,
What's really insulting about that is that there's no Applebee's anywhere close to the Abbey. So if you're a go-go dancer in West Hollywood, you have to like travel at least 35 minutes out to like Burbank to find the closest Applebee's. And I'm not even sure there's an Applebee's in Burbank. Like, you have to go far to get to an Applebee's. So here is like a gift card that you're going to probably spend all the value in gas just getting to be able to use.
Right. And if you have the body of somebody who's fit to work as a go-go dancer at the Abbey, you're not eating no damn Applebee's.
You're not eating anything. You're getting colonics. So this is where the famous moment happens where Nia pulls Danny aside and it's like, baby, no hip movement. He's like, why can't I? She's like, people are uncomfortable. You need to control yourself. So this is really annoying to me because now Nia can claim that she tried to be proactive and address the group's complaints. But this is actually not addressing it at all. This is actually completely not understanding what the issue is. And especially to think that like the hip movement is the thing that's going to bother people. It's like, don't do the hip movement. Maybe don't grind on anyone. That could be something you don't do. But like,
did Jeff say that you groped her fiance with your hips? Is that what she said you did?
But
it's still like an image-obsessed attempt at like controlling a narrative. She didn't say drink more moderately. She didn't say don't lose control. Don't act out of temper. She said, don't move your hips. That's you hyper-focusing on the sexual part of it and not like the actual alcohol part of it.
It's also, there's something so funny to think like, okay, we've got to curb his being like skeeviness. So don't move those hips. I was like, it just felt like that's the body part we're going to focus on here, the hips.
Too. You know what I mean? Like my whole body can pervert, not just the hips. What are you doing? It's just such a, I keep going back to the church thing, but it's such a churchy misunderstanding of like the issue. You know what I mean? It's the same as like telling girls not to wear short skirts because that's how you get, how you temper lust, as opposed to just telling people not to like act inappropriately with people's boundaries. It's like just putting the emphasis on the wrong thing. Like, and you're deliberately doing so. Like,
yeah. I also feel like there's an element about it that's, it's almost like such a strange response in my mind it almost has like that passive aggressive quality, which Danny leaned into earlier this season. Like, look at me, I'm not dancing. I'm not drinking. It's fine. I'm not drinking. It makes people uncomfortable, where you're like, okay, you're highlighting this great sacrifice that you made, but the sacrifice is not what we're looking for.
And also, it's very passive aggressive. It's not an intentional, thoughtful thing, because you got pissed at Nia for suggesting it, first of all. And second, you're trying to blame everybody else's discomfort for why you can't be yourself. And it's like, no one's asking you not be yourself. Everyone's asking yourself to not infringe upon the comfort of other people. You know what I mean? It's like, I think they know exactly what the issue is. They're just purposely choosing the parts of the arguments that can work for them. That's all. Cause now, like you said, Nia gets to be like, I told Danny to calm it down, but like Danny not moving his hips isn't what groped Jasmine. It isn't what cussed you and Lala out at whatever San Diego trip that was. That wasn't his hips. His hips had nothing to do with all of that. You know what I mean? His hips aren't drinking in the pantry. Like, like, this is so, it's so obnoxious.
It's time for a commercial. It's time for a Crappens commercial.
So then, of course, he goes up to every single person and be like, well, apparently I can't swing my hips. Apparently I can't move. Apparently I can't do this. So it's going around to everyone. It's like, okay, if you want people to not think that you are annoying or weird or make people uncomfortable, if you're like, okay, I will moderate my behavior because I've heard that my friends are uncomfortable by my behavior, by what I do, I will moderate it. Then you just do, you moderate it. You don't go over to everyone and complain about how you're not doing the thing that you want to do. Because actually, by you complaining to everyone, you're saying you've actually not changed. You're actually upset that you can't do the thing that you truly want to do, which is to make people uncomfortable. Like, he's not saying, oh, I want to make people uncomfortable, but you do want to do the thing that's upsetting everyone. And now you're going to go and be a martyr to everyone. You're going to go around being like, oh, look at me. Look at the grand sacrifice I made at the gay club.
And also, it's like, what I noticed is, and I guess it's because he doesn't want to concede anything and admit that he does have a problem. So he, you know, it's like when a lawyer tells you not to say anything in court that can fuck up your appeal. So even if you are remorseful, you can't really show it. But he never once has he gone to anyone and been like, hey, what is the thing that makes you uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
He never says, hey, when it's brought back to him that other people are that Michelle says that he makes people uncomfortable, he never says, what did Michelle tell you was uncomfortable? He never asks the next question because he doesn't want to confront the answer to that question. So now he and Nia are deciding for other people what would be appropriate change that they want to see, rather, and then get to finesse it so that it suits them in a way that doesn't make them the bad guys, as opposed to genuinely approaching their friend group and wondering what they can do to like accommodate one another.
Because they also, let's not forget, they also have, I think, a bit of a conspiratorial view over everything, which is that I know I'm not making people uncomfortable. I know people, now that Jax is gone, they need to have a villain. So they're going to throw me under the bus, as Jax had already declared that he was going to. Because Jax did say that. I mean, Jax did want to bring that out. And so he's like, I see, I'm not even going to give this life because it's so preposterous. I'm not making people feel uncomfortable. They just need to say this because they need to have a storyline. And so that's a way to kind of like, for them to like, to reconcile what's happening here. And so as a result, that's why he's not curious to find out, because he's actually doesn't believe it's even has a grain of truth to it in the first place. So why would you try to find out what makes people uncomfortable if you don't believe it's happening if you think it's actually just a tool to make TV? So there, that's what his mindset is right now. And I think that's why he's getting all in a tizzy, because he really feels like everyone is working together to make a storyline so that way he's the bad guy. But what he doesn't realize is that we're watching, and like, you're doing it. You are doing all the heavy lifting to make you seem like the bad guy on this season.
Which also kind of goes back to what I was saying before, which is that I don't understand the motivation for him still remaining on the show, because even if the drinking is not an issue, the misogyny and the way he talks to his wife is an issue. So like, I genuinely don't understand. Maybe he just doesn't see how he talks to Nia as a bad thing. He just inherently doesn't, because I'm just like, there, he has not positioned himself well to have any sort of thing to offset the complaints other people have. It would be one thing if he were like not just fighting them on the alcohol issue, but he was bringing something different to the table. He's not even doing that. He's not even trying to be likable. He's just being like stubborn about this one thing. And it's like, okay, I can understand if you say, I don't want to let Lala have this one thing, but he's not bringing anything else to, you know what I mean? We're not seeing him be likable in scenes with Jesse. We're not seeing him be likable in I haven't seen a single thing about him that would make me want to root for him, even if I thought that everybody else was full of shit and that Jax did and conspired to take him down. You know what I mean? He's not.
Yeah. And one thing that definitely makes me not want to root for him, I can't stand when he does this, or really anyone does this. So now he's sitting around, now he's moping because he can't move his hips. So now he's moping and he's like, oh, Char, I hope I didn't move my hip too much right then. Hope I didn't make you feel uncomfortable. Oh, I guess everyone's triggered. I don't want everyone to be triggered around me. He's doing this thing with, like, making... same thing he did to Lala, where he's like making fun of basically therapy.
He's mocking you for having boundaries. He's mocking you for boundaries.
But the funny thing is that he and Nia are frequently having these, like, you know, these alone scenes where they're talking in therapy talk, you know?
They're not talking in therapy. They're talking in marriage counseling at the church. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, where pastor.
When he said that, he said he goes to weekly therapy about his drinking, I was like, brother.
That's not
you
therapy. Talking
to your pastor, and your pastor says nice things to you because he knows that if you mention his church on the show, he might get a bigger following. Like, please, you guys are not getting any. There's nobody. Yeah. Licensed medical, licensed social worker degree over here, you know.
Exactly. And so at one point, Michelle Lolly is like dancing on the bar. And of course, this is Danny's takeaway. Michelle gets on top of the bar and she shakes her tail feather, dropping it like it's hot. Like, that's fine. But me shaking my hips, maybe doing a body roll to my wife, that's what makes everyone uncomfortable. It's like, the fact, like, he's such a literalist about this. the fact that he cannot connect these.
He literally, no, he knows exactly what's going on. How is a hot girl standing on a bar at a party in a venue where this is the sort of thing that happens have anything to do with you having in the past groped somebody when you were drunk? You know those aren't the same things. You know those aren't the same things. And it's hilarious because if we're talking about problematic drinking, Michelle Lally, of all people, isn't the problematic drinker. Not in that group. This is the one time she's letting loose. And now you're using her to contrast with yourself as the, like, you are Mr. Can't do one event without sneaking off into a bathroom or some shit to suck down a white claw. And you talking about Michelle. Michelle has never even smiled on this damn show. What are you talking about?
You've never seen someone so sad up there doing the coyote ugly thing. So the other way that Danny makes people uncomfortable on the show, because he, again, like we've mentioned before, he thinks it's purely a sexual thing. But it's like, no, it's just the things that come out of your mouth. Because now he's moping around and he's talking to Jesse and Nia, or not Nia, to Lacey maybe. I forget who, but he's like, well, I'm gonna get uncomfortable. Everyone's gonna get uncomfortable. Watch out, I'm gonna make people uncomfortable. So now it's like, oh, when I talk to you, I can't even have fun with you because you're actually just gonna gripe to me about how you're put upon by people's boundaries, right? And so like he doesn't realize it. It's like that shit is the thing that makes people not want to be around you when you're drunk, because you're either going to be like obnoxious to your wife or to other people, or when you're checked, you're then going to go around and complain about how you were checked to everyone. And either way, no one wants to talk about any of the above.
Any of those things.
None of the above, right?
So the thing that was like really annoying me in this scene, and maybe we just didn't see the other conversations, Nia was the one who told him to stop shaking his hips. Not a single fucking person told him to stop shaking his hips. It was his wife who did. So now your wife misunderstands the assignment and she tells you what to do, misunderstanding the assignment. And now you're blaming everybody else for you getting the homework wrong. Like, this is crazy. And what did anyone besides Nia tell him not to shake his hips? I didn't see it. All I saw was Tom Schwartz. He didn't have rhythm. You know what I mean?
Well, he's probably, you know, he is complaining about everyone, you know, in the cast, but he's also kind of complaining about Nia too. I think it's like a mix of everything. He's like upset at her for doing this, and he's upset at the cast, and he's just being a baby. I mean, at the end of the day, he's just being a giant baby, and no one wants to party with a baby. So, speaking of which, Zach has returned, and now he has a bandage over his head. He has a full-on head wound.
I was so shocked production let him come back to the party. Genuinely. I don't care what a doctor says. I'm not risking it.
Yeah, like if you've got stitches in your head.
This is how I know I'm pushing in here watching a show thinking about liabilities. Come on now.
But like, yeah, like you're like if you get drunk and you've got a head injury and you fall over, that's another thing. Alcohol thins your blood, maybe. Like it's not.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he kept like, what are you doing, bro?
Yeah.
Did they kind of form like, if you die at this party, you're not gonna sue us, your family can't sue us?
Had to have been. So Brittany's sitting at the bar, and she's showing the bartender, she's like, this is my son, he's 5 years old. And the bartender's like, uh-huh. Like, yeah, I'm gonna say this right now, Brittany, I think generally speaking bartenders don't care when people show them pictures of their family, but I think especially at a gay bar. And you're just like, you're a straight woman at a gay bar being like, this is my son. Like, literally no one. You're barking up the wrong tree.
She's my boo. She's like, this is my boo. Like,
my boo. And so she's sitting there and she's sad. And Krista comes over. She's like, you okay? You're feeling a lot of feelings? She's like, I'm good. I'm good. And she says, it's been a whole weekend. Like, just everything's coming out right now. But she's smart enough to know she's not going to have this conversation with Kristen while there's so much sound in the background. She's like, we'll have an isolated conversation on the next episode. So now...
Hiding in the New York City streets, sound in the background.
She's not like Watch What Crappens, where we welcome all sorts of sound interference. So now they all go back onto the bus, and Danny lays down across all the back seats. Because he's, guess what? Too drunk. And he's also, he gets carsick, but let's be honest, he's also too drunk, right? So he needs to lie down. And he's being like grouchy and loud about it. He's like, I need to go shit in the back and lay down. I can't even look at them. Come back with me. Get back here. Get back here. He's just being like very petulant. It's like, he's not even, yes, he's being belligerent, but it's like his tone is not even belligerent. His tone is just like spoiled brat. He's just like a whiny child right now. And it's just, it's grating to listen to. So Danny's in the backseat. And so he's bitching and moaning. He's trying to get Nia to come back there to take care of him and everything. And he's like, why are we leaving? Who's in here? Nia, who's in here? She's like, it's Brittany and Kristen and Luke and Jesse and Lacey. Just people that we like. And he's like, can we get the air conditioning turned on here? He's making all these requests because he's going to get car sick or claustrophobic. I don't know what it is. He's like, Nia, ship back here. Ship back here. And the thing is that like Nia thought there was going to be two or three different vans. But there's only gonna be one van. So there's not a seat for everyone. And so people, he's taking up too many seats by lying across them and there's not room. And then Nia's trying to be like, Daniel, like you have to sit up because there's not enough room. He's like, but why? Why can't I shut? Why can't I lie here? I want to be able to lie here. What's wrong with you? Who's yelling at me? And they're like, no one's yelling at you. And he's having a hissy fit in the back of this van. And he's also taking up seats. There's no room for everyone. And he will not shut up. And he's going on and on and on. And then Nia, he's like, Nia, shit over here. Shit over here. Let me not put my feet on you, Nia. I'm putting my feet. She's like, Daniel, I'm claustrophobic. She's like, I don't care. So then she's explaining, oh, no, he's going to get nauseous.
Commercials. Here comes one right now.
Okay, but so, like, my thing is, why does she indulge him? That was what I was saying earlier. It's one thing to be, like, actively not trying to blame the woman for the obnoxious way that her husband behaves, but she indulges him at every turn. And then, again, like we said before, when someone approaches him or confronts him, she protects him. And then even when they're defending her, she protects him. And so here, when she's like, when he's acting like a child, she like babies him. It's infuriating. He's older than her, I'm pretty sure, right? Like this is crazy. And also like, well, fuck you for acting like a child here, because I was so turned off by the fact that he was like, I don't want, who's on this bus? Who the fuck are you to decide who sits on what bus? Even if there were three vans, why do you get to decide who sits on what?
Yeah, exactly. And so then at one point, he's like, ow, don't dig your nails into my freaking stomach. She's like, it was an accident. Move it. If I were her, I'd be like, who the fuck do you think you're talking to? I am your wife. And you sit there and if you barf, you barf, but you be quiet right now. I've had enough out of you. But she's like, it was an accident. Please move your feet. I'm getting claustrophobic. So he is being insufferable. And basically the way the episode ends is that Janet has to pee into a cup. And we see Janet pee into a cup, and then she holds it up. She holds it up like she's giving a toast on Game of Thrones or something, like to Westeros. And I'm like, put that cup down. Do not raise a cup of pee above anyone's head. It stays low, so that way if it sloshes, it's on your hand and no one else. And they hit a bump.
That pee was pretty dark colored. You know what I mean? It was like the color of Red Bull. It's like, girl, drink some water. I know you've been on vacation, but my goodness.
Hydrate. Well, the good news is, as we end the episode, it's Danny's birthday now. So next week, we get to see more of a shit show. And we get to see Lala go off on Danny yet again. And I will say, like, I was not excited about Lala coming onto this show, but I think she's been actually really good. And she is the only one who's been truly telling off Danny. And I think it's every time she does it, I love it. So
I love it. I love it too.
Look forward to.
So first of all, like, I don't understand why Lala doesn't lean into this, but I think she, you know, is probably still, I do think somebody talked to production and was like, don't call us alcoholics on camera. I do think something like that happened. Some kind of conversation happened. But I don't understand why she doesn't lean into the fact that because she's sober, she can identify problem drinking. Like, I feel like that's her trump card here. And even, I remember at one point in this episode, when they're at the poolside, like cabanas or whatever, and Danny had already used the PTSD line at the beach, and then he uses the PTSD line to the rest of the group, after he uses it with her and just Luke, and then when they get to the rest of the group with Brittany and them and Jasmine and them, he brings up the PTSD from last season line again. She goes, I'm going to the water. She literally just gets up and walks away because she knows he's full of shit. So I'm just like, why doesn't she leverage the fact that she's a problem drinker and that she can identify it in him, and maybe he's not ready to have that conversation, but I know what I see. And I mean, he doesn't respect her. She's a woman. She's unmarried. He's. I think in the preview, he's like, "Where's your husband?" Like, that's supposed to mean something. You know what I mean?
Like, well, it's rich that Danny likes to lean on PTSD when it works for him. He's allowed to be triggered, but like when other people are triggered, isn't that rich? No way.
It's so Republican of him to like mock you for being easily triggered and then go on a freak out when you say even the slightest thing. It's so classic. It's so Trumpian. But also just kind of like, I'm not gonna blame a woman for being in an abusive dynamic, but it is crazy to me that they have four kids under four. I'm so curious as to how they have four children under four, because that means they're having sex. And I'm just so curious as to like what Danny can do at all to get Nia in the mood. Is he just like mounting her at night? Like this is Game of Thrones or some shit? Like what the fuck? Like, I see her performing her wifely duties, and I don't know if it's just because of her personality and like maybe how she's been sort of like, shaped into the mold of a wife by their beliefs or whatever, but there's nothing about their dynamic that represents desire or affection or like, oh, I want to get it in. And I remember he said at one point, he was like, that he like went to church and asked for like, he went to church specifically to find like a godly woman, but who's also a freak in the sheets. And I'm like, okay, I guess maybe, but he thinks his hips are Magic Mike. So maybe freak means something different to him than it means to me. But like, there is nothing like, okay, when Kristen and Luke argue, I still feel desire from Luke. I still feel like he looks like she's been berating him, but he still feels connection, attachment, desire for Kristen. There's everything about Danny and Nia's dynamic is sterile. So I'm wondering, like, when are you fucking to have these kids? Because there's nothing that gives off sex about y'all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't even like to think about
like, you don't want to see Polly Pocket fucking his tiny
girl. You know what? My brain doesn't want to go up to Santa Clarita. Okay. But, they are definitely like an endless font of fascination this season. Ray, thank you so much for joining me and filling in Ronnie's shoes for this episode of The Valley.
You did a great job.
I love your unfiltered and like pure, wonderful thoughts and opinions on all this stuff. And if anyone wants to hear more of Ray's thoughts on this or Love Island or really many other TV shows, you're at, what was it again? Rafat?
Ray Sani.
It's at Ray Sani. Okay.
Ray Sani.
At Ray Sani.
You guys, I'm so sorry for the noises around me. I apologize. Ben is not unprofessional. It's me. That's why I don't have my own shit.
You should have your own show because you just, I don't know, I've always loved your opinions.
So. I always love yours too. You're very empathetic. You're a very empathetic person when you watch these shows. I think that's like a really, I try to be, but sometimes when I don't like somebody, I don't give them grace.
Yeah.
But you're very careful to like try and see like the other side, like, and I, you know, Janet
it's,
is like
it's the my perfect- damage as an adult it's my damage as an adult because I never want to speak about something authoritatively if I don't have authority, and I feel like I don't have authority until I consider all sides of a situation, and then I'm like, okay, I've examined all the sides and I've used all the evidence and this is where I stand. And some people just are like, no, I'm just going to like shoot from the hip. And like, I've just never been that person. But there are some times where I'm just like, I fucking can't stand this person.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the other side.
Sometimes you don't even have to see the evidence to arrive at fuck you, but like, it's nice that you try. But also it's just, I think, you know, too, and it's like important to me, and I don't know why I even take it this seriously, but lately I feel like there has been, not lately, just over time, there has been an erosion in like obviously in media literacy writ large, but just even the reality TV consumption. I don't want to say that like when we were watching Jersey Shore, we were smarter, but it does feel like the audiences watching Jersey Shore were smarter because we were able to give a shit about a villain, to like think about villainesses in particular, like with more grace, you know what I mean? And it's so strange to watch. I think I'm being judgmental, and I'll let you go, I promise. But I think that Gen Z is so, they're so traumatized by a Trump presidency that they are very like, there's no gray. It's black and white. You're fascist or not. And I think they're ascribing this to the people they consume on TV and think that it reflects on them as individuals and their morals for who they enjoy watching on TV. And I just, it is important to me for some strange reason that we don't in the audience on social media moralize good entertainment off of TV. Because if people got the show that they claim they want, we would never have anything.
I 100% agree. I love my villains. I often don't agree with them. I am often politically not aligned with them.
Yeah.
I love my villains because I love good storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think that in the wake of Trump, that people are just very cognizant of that it can be dangerous to put people that you are not aligned with on a platform. And so I think we are constantly straddling this idea of like, God, I fucking hate Ramona Singer. So she should be eradicated. And then we're like, but then we also hate New Rony, you know, and there are times when like, yes, you actually should, like, you've lost your privileges to be on a platform, but like, we cannot moralize our villains off of every show. So like, it's good to have our villains. Storytelling requires protagonists and villains, and without a villain, things get boring.
You aren't who you're watching on TV. And I think that's like the biggest, most important, like, part of this too. I'll go theorize somewhere else, but it's just I noticed this most with like Love Island or even Summer House, and it's more of a racial thing, I think, that I'll talk somewhere else, but it's just like, you are not, your damage is not the damage of the person on the show. And so it's important to not think of reality TV as a mirror. It can be a contemplation of society writ large, but it's not a exact mirror of your direct experience. And so when I say that Ebony K. Williams ruined Rony, I'm not a self-hating black person. She did ruin the show because there was a thing we were watching. And also Ramona Singer is a racist, terrible person. These are all true. Like the world isn't what you think it is. And like the world, TV doesn't have to reflect the world as you wish it would be. You can imagine, but also in your imagination, bad things can exist as well. And I think, you know, we love this medium. And so, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yes. I talk too much.
Blah, blah, blah. For more thoughts, check out Ray online. And also check out Ray on the ANTM documentary, where you were amazing. I forgot to mention the top of the show. You were so... Everything you were saying, I was like, oh God, Ray is so good. Thank you so much for being here. It's time for me to hop on to my next recap for Next Gen New York City. Love you, Ray. And I will hopefully talk to you very, very soon.
Bye, love. Thanks for patience. Bye.
Watch What Crappens would like to thank its premium sponsors.
She answered the call. It's Adia Paul.
Ain't no thing like Allison King.
Our way is the Amber way.
It's the Foster and the Furious. It's Amanda Foster.
It's Always Automatic with Ashley Otto.
Put your hands together for Carly Clapp.
Get on the right foot with Chrissy Offutt.
She's not just a Sheila, she's a Daniela. Etchels.
We never miss her call. It's Diane Call.
Sunday in the Park with Dylan Clark.
Big Yay, it's Emily Gauthier.
Aaron McNicholas, she don't miss no trickolas.
Hava Nagila Weber.
You'll never hide from Heidi Eleanor Jones.
It's no BS. We love Hugo E.S.
Jamie, she has no last namey.
Sipped some scotch with Jessica Trotch.
She's our favorite streamer, Caroline Peacock.
Kristen the Piston Anderson.
Que sera, sera, whatever will be, will Lauren Silsby.
She gets an A from us, it's Lindsay D.
Let's give a kisserino to Lisa Lino.
Fresh as a daisy, it's Maisie McHenry.
Come again?
We're obsessed with Margaret O'Halloran.
Megan Berg. You can't have a burger without the Berg.
Gather round for the lore of Michelle Moore.
This is Living with Michelle Vivian.
I love a ya, Olivia Williamson.
She sure is swell. It's Raquel.
Yes, we canna. It's Savannah.
Cast a spell with Shannon Spellman.
Let's share with Sharon Eldridge.
Darn Skippy, it's Tippy.
And our super premium sponsors.
She's VVIP, it's Amanda V.
Somebody get us 10 cc's of Betsy MD.
We're taking the gold with Brenda Silva.
Let's get real with Caitlin O'Neill.
Put us on a stretcher, it's Charlotte Fletcher. Hogle your horses, it's Christine Hogle.
Don't get salty with Christine Pepper. Can't have a meal without the Emily Sides.
Who, what, why, where, and Gwen Pentland.
Nobody holds a candle to Jamie Kendall.
We got our wish, it's Jen Plish.
Have a kebab with K. Rob.
My favorite Murdo, Karen McMurdo.
Let's get savage with Laura Wildman.
In the study with a candlestick, it's Leslie Peacock.
We're ride or die for Lisa Ryder Barron.
She's a whiz, it's Liz Sarthy.
Always killing it, it's Lola Alkalani.
Roger that, it's Marlis Rogers.
The incredible edible Matthews sisters.
She eases our woes, it's Melissa St. Rose.
She's the lady of the house, it's Rachel Sharouse.
There's a chance of meatballs, it's Rebecca Cloud.
She's our princess, it's Rebecca Prince.
She's the queen bee, it's Sarah Lemke.
We cannot tell a lie, it's Sarah Telefson.
Shannon, out of a cannon, Anthony.
Please don't stop, it's Soli and Pop.
Let's take off with Tamla Plain.
Strike a pose, it's Tori Rose.
She ain't no shrinking Violet Kuchar. We love you guys.